there, and welcome to episode 4, season 4, The Double Force, Good Numbers of Rainbow Bridge Connection. I'm Kayla, and we have another amazing guest. I know I say that every time, and you're going to hear it every single time, but I think you guys are really going to enjoy this one. We have Ellie Lax. I said that right? Is that, woo-hoo! I do that every time. They're going to laugh because this is my thing. I say your name, and then I go, I did that
You did it perfect.
right? She is an animal behaviorist, an animal communicator, and she's also the founder of The Gentle Barn, which we were talking off camera or, off recording about it. I'm so excited to hear all of this. I'm so excited. So let's start. Like, tell me about yourself. Tell me everything.
Okay. Well, I was born an animal lover, and I was very lucky to grow up in the Midwest and the East Coast, and there was always forests and lakes by my houses. And while other people were going to the mall or the movies or playing with their dolls or enjoying sports, I was out in the woods and lakes anytime I had a spare second, watching the tadpoles turn into frogs, finding salamanders and bunny rabbits in the woods. And for me, nature was this magical kingdom, and animals were these mythical creatures that I literally could not get enough of. I wanted to be with them. I wanted to watch them. I wanted to be in their company. And a few very pivotal things happened in my very young life. The first thing happened when I was very young, like, I don't know, 5 or 6, where I was in Temple with my parents, and my mom wanted me to sit very still and be very quiet. And I couldn't do it. I was fidgeting. I couldn't see. I couldn't see what they were doing. I couldn't hear what they were doing. I didn't care what they were doing. I wanted to get out of there. So I finally told her I was going to go to the bathroom, and I snuck out the back door of the temple to a field. Now that held my attention. I was crawling around in my tights and my patent leather shoes, following grasshoppers and smelling flowers. And at some point, I rolled over to my back to look at the sky. I wanted to look at the clouds floating by. And to my excitement, the sky was filled with monarch butterflies. I had never seen such a thing. Now, looking back now, obviously that field must have been on the migration path of the monarch butterfly. But to a young person, it was magic. And unable to do that in temple, in that field, I held so still and so quiet that the butterflies landed on me and my body was covered in butterflies. And it was the most incredible thing that had ever happened to me. I loved nature and I loved animals, but here was nature and animals recognizing me, choosing me, interacting with me, and I felt a part of them. I felt like I was initiated into some very secret club. And it set me on fire and created a passion inside of me that there's not even words to describe. I just knew that I needed more of that feeling. A few years later, I was 7-ish, and by then, I had seen enough things that were disturbing to me. I was seeing bullying at school. I started becoming aware of what people really do to animals. And it filled me with sadness. And I actually said, I want to get out of here. I don't want to be here. This planet is not for me. These people are not for me. And I actually tried to commit suicide at 7 years old. I did a TED talk about it. But being 7, I didn't know how to do it, so I failed. And I ran to the garden that had always been my sanctuary to cry. I was so frustrated. I didn't want to be here, but I couldn't leave. I was so frustrated and I didn't know where else to turn. I went to the garden, and this hummingbird came within inches of my face. And he just hovered there for what felt like forever. And I'll never forget, like, his bright colors and his black beady eyes looking into mine. And an incredible feeling came over my body, like, you have to be here, but it's going to be okay. We need you. And this feeling of peace came over me. And again, there was that time where I loved animals, but here was this hummingbird that came to my distress call, that was noticing what was happening with me. And again, I felt this incredible sacred connection to that hummingbird and to all of nature far more than I felt with my peers around me. So for me, animals were my greatest teachers, healers, and friends. They were my witnesses. They were who I cried to and they listened. They were the ones that made me feel wanted and lovable. And they were the ones that kept me going when I didn't want to be here. But what was super confusing as I grew up was that the people around me didn't see animals the way that I did. They saw them as, you know, objects, things we eat, things we wear, things we throw away when we don't want them anymore. And I did not get it at all. So after that experience with a hummingbird, I started telling people, pretty much anyone that would listen, that when I grow up, I was going to have a big place full of animals and show the world how beautiful they are. And all the lonely people of the world can come and heal with us. And that became my mantra. But I had absolutely no idea how to do it. So I would sit in school and I would think about the gentle barn instead of listening to the teacher until my notebook, my desk, and my arms were covered in pictures of animals. And when I would go to sleep each night, I would dream about the gentle barn, what it would feel like, what it would smell like, what animals I would get to love, what would it feel like for me to rub their bellies and hold them. And that's how I went to sleep every single night. And the gentle barn became a real place in my mind. And every time I felt lonely or isolated or scared or sad, I would go there in my mind and I would just live in this place. Well, I grew up, and when I was going through college, I started a dog walking business, a dog walking training and boarding business. I had started training dogs professionally since I was 11 years old. I could hear them. I could speak to them. We could have a conversation. I could kind of negotiate whatever the people wanted. It was super easy for me. And I always said that when I was old enough and I had my own dog training business, that when I got my first paycheck, I would go to the shelter and I would start saving animals that were going to be euthanized. That was like my lifelong dream. Mm-hmm. And so when I started this dog walking, dog training business, I finally got a whole bunch of clients and I got my very first kind of significant paycheck. And I was like, I'm going to the shelter, just like I said when I was a kid. And I drove to the shelter and I actually write about all of this in my first book. It's called My Gentle Barn, Creating a Sanctuary Where Animals Heal and Children Learn to Hope. And I went to the shelter thinking that it was going to be easy, thinking that I was just going to waltz in, pick, you know, some dog that needed help, go home. And instead I entered this room with 300 begging, pleading, screaming, yelping dogs. And at the same time that I'm picking who's going to live, I am also leaving everyone else to die. Or, and it was a horrible decision. And there was a moment where I was like, oh my God, I changed my mind. I can't do this. I got to get out of here. And it's like I heard this voice in my mind, like, just close your eyes. And so I closed my eyes and I almost uttered like this little prayer, like, please show me who I'm here for today. Please help me decide who I'm supposed to bring home. And when I opened my eyes, all the other noise, all the other kind of sights faded in the background. And the only thing that loomed large in my vision was this beautiful, beautiful lab with seven puppies.
Oh.
And so I went to the shelter staff and I said, hey, can you tell me about her? And they said, yeah, she came from a puppy mill and we're going to euthanize the whole family later tonight.
Oh.
So I said, no, no, you're not. And I took the whole family home.
Oh.
The story gets a little bit sadder because one by one by one, all the puppies died of distemper, which was absolutely the worst thing I've ever been through. And then when the last puppy died, the mom collapsed and I brought her to the same vet who had been treating all the puppies. And he said, well, yeah, she has it too. You should probably euthanize her. And I said, are you kidding me? I have dreamt of this since I was a child. I finally started a career and with my very first paycheck, went to the shelter and got this family for them all to die. I was like, no, this is not how this story ends. This is not what I've been waiting for. She's going to make it. And the vet was like, well, I don't know what to tell you. I mean, there's really nothing we can do. So I brought her home. I put her on my bed. I looked her in the face and I said, now look here. You have been suffering in a puppy mill your whole life, and you've been waiting for me, and I've been waiting for you. And you're going to learn how to walk on a leash, and you're going to learn how to look out the window and get excited to be in the car. And you're going to learn how to play ball and have toys, and you're going to sleep in my bed, and we are going to have a love affair. And so you got to get better. And I started giving her sub-Q fluids 3 times a day and like vitamins and minerals and good food down her throat. And she made it. And that was the beginning of my rescue story. And we had a wonderful life together, me and this beautiful girl named China. She was a black lab, and her name was China, and she was just absolutely beautiful. So I spent the next several years creating relationships at all the high-kill shelters in and around Los Angeles, and basically telling them, like, you have parvo puppies, you have old dogs that are not adoptable, you have scared or aggressive dogs that are not adoptable. You call me, I will take them. And so they did. I was on the roster of all of these volunteers and managers of shelters, and I would go there on a regular basis. And they would basically come running to me every time they saw me, and they were like, oh, there's an 11-year-old German Shepherd that's about to be euthanized because her owner just surrendered her. Can you take her? And I just had an incredible experience taking these impossible to place dogs, bringing them home, rehabilitating them, loving them, and finding beautiful, beautiful homes for them. And the ones that were not adoptable would stay with me. The thing that happened after several years was, there's a very, very fine line between rescuer and hoarder.
There is.
There is. My house was immaculate and spotless, but I had dogs and cats in literally every single room. And what was happening is because I was attracted to the ones that were not placeable, some of them were never adoptable. And, I kept being called to more. And so eventually the numbers in my house escalated. And one day I just looked around and I was like, if you're not going to find homes for these dogs, then you need to stop taking dogs in. But you can't become like some kind of crazy hoarder. You need to stop. So I stopped taking dogs in and I became a hospice home for the dogs I had already committed to. They were old and blind and sick and deaf and scared and aggressive. And I kept dreaming about starting the Gentle Barn, but I didn't know how. Like, what is the first step to start a sanctuary? I had no idea. Well, I was doing an errand one day and I saw a petting zoo I'd never seen before. And I went in just to see what they were doing. And the place was absolutely awful. The goats and sheep had toenails 2 feet long and trouble walking. They were beating the ponies to keep going round and round in circles, carrying kids without a break. There was not water on the property, even though it was well over 100 degrees. But the worst thing about that property was that it was full of people, and not one single one of them could see the suffering right in front of them. And it was the same thing as my childhood. It's like I could see animals, but the people around me couldn't see them. And so I'm like, I got to get out of here. And I ran for the door, and blocking the exit was a very old and sick goat. She was beautiful, and she looked me in the eyes. She stopped me in my tracks, and she asked me for help. So I lived in a little house with a half acre backyard at the time, and I thought, well, I could bring home a goat. So I said, I'll help you. And I went to find the owner and said, hey, can I have that goat? And she said, no. And I said, well, can I buy her, name your price? And she said, no. And I said, well, that goat's dying. And I told her I would help her. So I'm just going to stay here till you say yes. And I stayed there for 12 days.
Oh
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Wow.
On the 13th day, she came and found me and said, take the goat and get the heck out of here. So I brought Mary home. And I got a vet to remove her tumors and trim her overgrown toenails and teach me how to massage her deformed legs so she could walk again. And a few months later, she was bouncing around my backyard as happy as can be.
Oh.
And I knew I had just started the Gentle Barn. So I ended up going back there for more animals. And to make a very long story short, which is all written in my book, My Gentle Barn, I brought all of these dilapidated and dying animals home with the help of the mobile vet, fixed them all. And one day woke up in the morning to and looked out my backyard to a backyard that was full of animals and realized I had just started my dream. So that's how the Gentle Barn got started. So the Gentle Barn is now a almost 25-year-old national organization located in Los Angeles, California, Nashville, Tennessee, and St. Louis, Missouri. We're hoping that we can expand to New York in the next year. So fingers crossed. What we do is we take in animals that have nowhere else to go. Animals that are too old, too sick, too injured, or too scared to be adoptable. Mm. We bring them in and we rehabilitate them with veterinary care, but we also use acupuncture, chiropractic, massage therapy, energy healing, animal communication, nutritional supplements, music therapy, holding therapy, and lots of love. And once they're healed, if we can heal them quickly, then we can find homes of their own. And we have an adoption program all across America and into Canada. But if they need ongoing care for the rest of their lives, and most of our animals do, then we give them sanctuary with us. And then when they're ready, we partner with them to heal people with the same stories of trauma and connect people to the love and magic of animals. So we're open to the public on Sundays, where people can come and hug cows, cuddle turkeys, give pigs tummy rubs, hold the chickens, hear their stories of resilience, and leave realizing that we're all the same, even though we look different. And then during the week, we host school field trips, private tours, gentle birthday parties, cow hug therapy sessions, where people can find healing with our gentle giants, equine therapy, where people can practice confidence and leadership skills with our horses, and barnyard therapy, where surrounded by small, adorable animals, people can remember that no matter what we've gone through, there still is hope.
I was gonna say something, but you have got me speechless. Honestly, usually what I'll do is I'll interject and, you know, ask a question or something to that effect, but you're like living my dream. You're like literally living my, like, the dream of, that is the most amazing story I have ever heard in my life. And you have grown so much. This is wild. This is wild.
Yeah, I feel grateful every single day that I get to live my dream. It really is the best thing. I highly recommend it.
For sure.
And the part of my story that I didn't yet mention is that from the time I was very, very small, I could always hear animals. I have a very vivid memory of being 6 years old, playing in my room. I played with those Briar horses, you know, those horse figurines.
Mm-hmm.
I had like every breed, every color, every size, and I would sit there and like make them gallop around. and I, in my mind, I heard this cry, like, help me. And so I put down my toy horses. I went out of my room, went through the house, out the door, down the street, took a right at the lake. And there underneath a very tall tree was a bird that had fallen out of her nest. And I was like, oh, thank you for calling me. I'll help you. And I picked her up and took her home, made a nest out of mud and grass, fed her until she could fly away. And I was very, very shocked when I went into elementary and later high school to find out that my peers didn't do that. Like, I thought everyone did that. Later on in high school, I started becoming bullied and teased for my connection with animals. And unfortunately, for a spell of time, I shut down that gift because I wanted to be normal. I really want to say to everyone that's listening, there is no such thing as normal. I think when we're kids, we think there's everyone else who is normal, and then there's us who is not.
Yep.
And that's just like a thing we make up in our head. The truth is there is no such thing as normal, and every single being is different. And we're all designed for who we're supposed to be and for what we're supposed to share with the world. But of course, as a kid, I didn't know that. So I wanted to be quote unquote normal. And so I shut out my gifts, and that was awful. And finally returned to my gifts, realizing that if I was going to live on this planet, I had to embrace all of me. So starting doing the dog rescue and then later the Gentle Barn, I use my animal communication to find out where our rescued animals have been before. Because a lot of us that adopt animals, it's like there's a whole chunk of their life that's missing.
Yes.
Yeah, right? But through animal communication, They let me know where they've been, what they've gone through. They let me know about their traumas or their joys. And we can get a fuller picture of where they've been before we meet them. And then, of course, I can ask them what they need, what they want, how they're feeling, so that I can serve them better. And then, of course, at the end of their life, there's all kinds of end of life decisions, right? Are they suffering? Are they not? Do they want more time? Do they want less time? Do they want to go to the hospital? Do they want to pass away on their own? I mean, there's so many impossible decisions, and animal communication really helps make those decisions because I can ask the animal themselves what they want and they give me their instructions. And sometimes they give me bucket lists. So not only do I have their instructions, but I can also help them fulfill their bucket list before they go. And so it really helps me do my job 1,000 times better for the animal. But during the pandemic, my husband has always told me that I should offer animal communication to other people. And there was a shame about it, you know, because of being teased when I was a teenager. I felt a little like I kept my animal communication as a secret.
Yeah.
I felt ashamed of it. I felt so worried that someone was going to laugh at me or tease me. But during the pandemic, my wonderful friend, Joan Rankwit, she has a school for animal communication and energy healing called Communication with All Life University. And she said, look, you are a brilliant animal communicator, but you suffer from lack of confidence. Why don't you enroll in my school and you can get that confidence back? And I did. And I got that confidence back. And it made me feel normal. And so my wonderful husband set me up with a website, and now I do animal communication professionally for people around the world remotely.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And so it's funny because I never thought that I would ever be happier than just doing the Gentle Barn and saving and healing animals. But then I get to be an animal communicator and it's like, oh my God, I'm even happier. I never thought that was possible.
That's absolutely amazing. I know. Well, you got me, like, my listeners know, sorry, the Peach, I did an episode about Peach last episode, so they know about her. Peach is in the background, so if you hear her whining, I'm sorry, she has to be in a kennel so she's not running around chasing Yoshi. You got me. My listeners always know I cry. Well, I used to cry like the first 2 seasons of this podcast. Every episode I would be bawling from other people's stories. I'm empathic, you know, an empath or whatever they, you know, empath's a bad word now, but I'm empath. So every time I hear somebody's story, that makes me sad or whatever. But you got me when you said, you know, there's all these decisions that have to be made, you know, when they're sick and when they're not doing well. And I feel like that is a huge part of the grief part for when it comes to companion animal loss, where you always want to do right by them. You know what I mean? Like, they offer you this, like, get it together, Kayla. They offer you this, like, unconditional love and companionship. And I always wanted to do right by them. You know what I mean? No matter the situation, I always wanted to do right. And a part of this grief that is lingering and crappy is that you never really know. You know what I mean? Like, I can hope that I did right, or I can hope that, you know, every decision I made was what they needed or they wanted. But then, you know, when you have other, you know, situations that are instant, like, okay, say, like, you know, they pass away in a very small amount of time. It's like, well, should I have done this or should I have done that? And I know a lot of my listeners can relate to that. So it's very, to me, it's very, like, nice and sweet to hear you say, like, you know, I was communicating to them and asking them what they wanted, because, like, there's humans that don't even get that compassion. You know what I mean? Though I feel, and this may be controversial, but I feel animals kind of deserve it more than humans a lot of times on that choice, because they're such pure beings. That it got me when you said that, because it's so true. It's so, like you said, that they're looked at as objects from a lot of people. And the people who love them so dearly and deeply, we are weirdos to other people. Like, we're looked at as weird or off or, you know, different because of how deeply we feel for animals. from the other population. And so it's so nice to hear somebody say, like, I put their feelings into account, because that's what caused a lot of issues for me, was not knowing if I put it in account enough for her, or if I did every, you know what I mean? So it's so nice to hear that.
Yeah, and you know what? When we lose an animal soulmate, missing them is unbearable. But when you put guilt on top of that, how are you able to function? It is just too painful. And so what I try to help my clients with is removing the guilt, and then you just have to deal with missing them.
Yes.
And you know, I have so many clients that will call up and say, I wasn't there when my animal passed away, and I feel like I let them down. Or I really listened to the veterinarian's recommendation to euthanize my animal, but I feel like, what if I did the wrong thing? What if my
Yes.
animal wanted more time? Oh my God, these are impossible decisions. Listen, you know, we know that our animals have a shorter lifespan than we do, and we know that we're most likely going to outlive them. But the fact that we need to take their lives in our hands and make those end-of-life decisions, oh my God, it's almost impossible. And so animal communication really takes the pain out of it and takes the guilt out of it, because you can hear from the animal's mouth what they want. I remember doing a reading once with these lovely people that had this beautiful cat, and the cat was, God, in his 20s, like old cat. And when I talked to him, he showed me being really frail, very thin, kind of matted coat because he wasn't grooming himself as much. And kind of like hearing that description, my first thought was, oh, well, maybe he's ready to go. And he had a terminal illness. And when I talked to this cat, he said, I don't want to go. And I said, but you're so sick. And he said, yes, I am sick. And it's really easy to look at me and think I'm suffering, but actually, I'm not suffering as much as you would think. I don't feel the suffering that you're think you're seeing. And I want every single second I can get with my family. They give me so much love, and they make me so happy, and they make me so fulfilled. I literally want to go until I can't go anymore. And the people were so surprised to hear this, because this cat looked like he should go. But they honored his wishes. And I think they had, like, God, I don't know, 6 more weeks together. And then something changed. And so they booked another reading. And I talked to him, and he goes, yeah, I'm ready now. But he had 6 more magical weeks. But conversely, I had a cow that I loved very much. And I was in Missouri at our St. Louis, Missouri location. So I wasn't home. And my staff, and he was fine. When I left home, he was totally fine. My staff called me and said, there's something wrong with him. And so I was like, oh no. So I talked to him, which is another benefit of animal communication, because if I'm not home, I can still talk to them.
Yeah.
So I said, what's going on? And he said, he showed me that internally he was, I don't know if something ruptured or he had cancer. I don't know what was going on, but he showed me a lot of pain inside, and he said, I'm ready to go. And I said, okay, well, I'll be home in 2 days, and then I can walk you home. And he said, no, I want to go right now. And I said, well, but I'm not home yet. Like, can you wait 2 days? Like, you know, we can give you pain meds and you can feel comfortable, but can you wait 2 days so I can say goodbye to you? And he said, I love you, and we've shared a lot of really beautiful years together, but please don't make me wait. And so I honored his wishes, and the vet came out later that afternoon. Some of the things that animals say is validating to the person, because it's like they knew, because you know,
Yeah.
everyone's so intuitive whether they know it or not, right? But other times, things that the animals say are very surprising.
Yeah. I yeah, well, and that's why I think it would be really beneficial for someone to schedule, to schedule a reading with you, because I think, so do you do, my brain is all over the place right now.
Well, I'm getting lots of things
I
out.
got so involved in this. Okay, so do you do, is it only animals that are here, or can you channel animals that are have crossed over already?
I talk to both. And I
Okay.
say that I do a lot of different kinds of readings. I solve behavioral issues or health issues or end of life decisions, or I even do lost animals. But I have to tell you that my favorite thing in the whole wide world is talking to animals that have crossed over. I've lost a lot of animals, not lost because they're still with me, but I mean, said farewell in the
Right.
physical form to a lot of animals at the General Barn. I mean, currently we have 200 animals and we've been doing this for almost 25 years. So you can imagine that's thousands of animals that I've had to work with. And it's never gets easier. It's really hard to say goodbye. But my very first cow, the founder of cow hug therapy, my teacher, my mom, she raised me. She taught me the first 13 years of the General Barn. She hosted every single solitary special needs group, peace enhancement program, private tour. She did it all with me. That's her in the background. That's Buddha. When she passed away, and I know that you and your listeners are going to understand this, when she passed away, I thought I was going to die. I would not function. Not only could I not function, but I lay in a fetal position on the floor, wailing. Like I couldn't stop wailing. I couldn't stop crying. My husband didn't know what to do to help me. He was like, I don't know. Like he didn't know. He felt so helpless. It was
Right.
awful. It was awful. And because I was in so much grief, I couldn't hear her. I couldn't connect with her. So I had a friend of mine, another wonderful animal communicator, talk to her for me. And little by little by little, through those communications, I was able to heal and remember that she didn't leave me at all. She left her body and she's still right beside me. And she was able to get me through the grief and reconnect me with Buddha so that I could still talk to her every single day. And I still talk to her every single day. And I consider this woman to have helped me in a way that I can never repay. She saved my life. And so, as an animal communicator, to be able to talk to animals that have crossed over and do that same thing for other people and pay it forward is such an incredible honor. And also, just when they relay messages and memories, they're like, oh, remember that one time on the beach? Or remember that one time I was carrying that stick that was so huge and I couldn't get it through the door? Or
Right.
remember that yellow ball I had? And it makes the people laugh. It makes them remember who they really were. Because here's the thing, when we have animals that are lucky enough to live till old age, it's very easy to forget who they really were and to just remember them old and slow and ill. And the animal communications reconnect us to who they really were and their energy and their running and their playing and their curiosity. And then we remember who they really were. And it brings so much joy and so much healing. And it gets rid of the guilt because the animal is always here. Here's what I would like to say. We are all very intuitive. I don't believe that we're born when we're supposed to, but we die by mistake. I believe that we're born when we're supposed to and we transition when we're supposed to. And so, if we euthanize our animal or if the circumstances happen the way that they happen, it's because they were supposed to. If we were not meant to euthanize our animal, we wouldn't do it. We do it because, on some intuitive level, we can hear the animal saying they're done, or we know inside of ourselves that it's right.
Yeah.
And in those readings, the animal's always like, well, I waited on purpose for you to be out of town because if you were standing in front of me, I couldn't do it. I wouldn't be able to leave you. So I waited till you were out of the house so that I could pass. Or, no, oh my God, I was so ready. Even the animals that say at the last minute, well, I didn't want to leave you, but the minute I got out of my body, oh my God, you did the right thing. It's so much better. I'm so relieved not to be in pain. And so we can take that guilt right off the table and then deal with just missing them and then changing our relationship with them, because missing eventually will turn from grief to gratitude. And we can realize that instead of opening our eyes and being able to see them, we can close our eyes and be able to feel them and still connect with them. And I talk a lot about this in my new book, coming out May 21st, but it's actually available on Amazon for pre-order right now as we speak. And it's called Cow Hug Therapy, How the Gentle Barn Animals Taught Me About Life, Death, and Everything in Between. They taught me about meditation. They taught me about gratitude. They taught me about self-care. They taught me about mental health. They taught me how to grieve. And I can't wait to share all of those lessons that the animals shared with me with everyone else.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we always talk, I always talk about on this podcast that just their presence, and then the, a lot of times when in my case, losing them, like it turns into something beautiful that you don't expect. There's been a bunch of people that I've interviewed on this podcast that have become photographers for end of life. They've started nonprofits, rescues, but they've written books. They, you know, do all this stuff that would have never happened without that love and that loss. And it, you know, the same goes for me. I would have never started this podcast if it wasn't for the loss that I had. And then I had to go through a loss during the podcast. And it's really, it changes who you are. I always talk about that, that like that loss changed me as a person. It changed who I was. It changed how I was towards things. It made me smarter in terms of I tried to learn everything I could about rescue and, you know, animals and all this stuff. I was like you. I loved animals since the day I was born. I have loved animals. But I also, I wasn't privy. I tried to straddle that line of like normal, like you said, nobody's normal. But I always try to straddle that line of like, I love animals, but I'm not going to be where people think I'm crazy, for lack of a better word. And I was going to be a veterinarian, and I realized I couldn't do it. I could not see horrible cases and euthanize animals. I just could not do it. So it's very nice to hear your whole story and how you took, you know, you knew what you wanted to do, but you fell into it and you worked really hard. And now, like you said, it's been 25 years and you're doing all this stuff, and it's really inspiring. And I feel like any of our listeners, it would be very inspiring to hear, you know, take that, how you feel, and turn it into something beautiful, turn it into something, you know, honoring them. And that's just amazing. And the way you said that your favorite is communicating with animals that have passed because you can offer that to people, it's so true. It's so true. I mean, we've had a couple of communicators on this show. And I've tried really hard. I shut myself off when the first loss had happened. It like took me in a tailspin, like you said. And I shut myself off, and I don't believe in anything that I used to, and I don't pursue anything. And it was this year I just so happened to kind of start trying to reopen it and try to, you know, look for signs, because I'd always be like, there's no signs. That means there's nothing after this. There's no signs.
You know, I have a really interesting story about that. So I also, through this crazy journey, have noticed that reincarnation is a thing, because I had Buddha, my first cow, who used to wrap her neck around me and hold me. And then she passed away. And then we had the second cow, who was why we opened a location in Nashville, Tennessee, named Dudley, who also wrapped his neck around me and held me. I mean, they were literally the same cow. When Dudley passed away, I had learned about signs, and, you know, people say that our loved ones send us signs. So I'm like, okay, damn it. Like, let me see some signs. Mm-hmm. Like, where are they? I want to know. You tell me that you're still with me. I want proof.
100%.
So I was driving down the street one day, and I kid you not, I am not exaggerating, there was literally like 1 billion white butterflies in a giant cloud that crossed the that flew across the street, and in front of my car, I screeched on the brakes, and I sat there for like 35 minutes as the butterflies were passing. It took that long for them to pass me. And my first thought was, okay, that's a good sign. But then my brain started doubting, and I'm like, well, yes, maybe this is just a natural anomaly. Maybe it's in the news. Maybe other people saw it. And I kept searching for the news or for this story to be in the newspaper or someone else to have seen these butterflies. And nobody saw these butterflies except for me. And I have never seen that many butterflies in my life. I didn't think that that was possible. But so I thought maybe that was a sign, but then I'm like, maybe I'm making it up. Maybe I'm just looking for it. So I dismissed it. So I kept saying, okay, Dudley, I want a sign. And Dudley's like, oh my God, why won't you leave me alone? So I said, no, I want a sign that I cannot refute. He said, fine. So this is years ago when I was putting my daughter, she's 18 now, but she was, you know, a youngster back then. I wanted to put her to bed and I didn't want anybody to disturb us. So I turned my phone off. I turned the volume off. I turned the phone off. I put it face down on the counter in her bathroom to charge. And then I went into her bedroom to sing her to sleep. We're singing the songs and doing the stuff. And then all of a sudden I hear this huge noise and I'm like, what in the world is going on? And I thought it was like maybe my husband or my older kids, but it wasn't them. So I'm like, what in the world? So I got up and I went out. My phone was on. So I turned it from an upside position up to go, what in the world? My phone was on YouTube that I had not used that day or even that week, playing every single Solitary Dudley video in order. And it's not that way on YouTube. So our videos are not arranged in order. And I hadn't been on YouTube, but it was playing every single Solitary Dudley video back to back to back to back to back. And when it reached the last one, my phone turned itself off.
That is the most wild. And I love that you said that your brain was doing the, like, you know, trying to dismiss it. That's how mine is. My brain is like the, well, there's you can explain anything, you know? And my listeners know about this story, but one of my soul dogs passed away in September. And the beginning of, well, no, I'd say probably about September this year or this last year, I read a book from Laura Lynn Jackson about, you know, you need to ask for signs and you need to be very live with intention toward it, and you need to be purposeful and you need to be direct. You need to say, I want this. And so she says in the book, you need to pick an animal and tell them that that's the animal that you would like. And so for 2 days, I sat there, like, I read that part of the book and I didn't read anything further. And I sat there for 2 days. Okay, what animal am I going to do? What animal am I going to do? And I wanted to be, because, you know, that whole, like, I'm going to make sure that this doesn't happen. Because I want to make sure that if it does happen, it's 100% that this is what's happening. So I chose an armadillo because I was like, I live in Colorado. There's no armadillos out here. That's not going to happen. You know, no armadillos. And so I tell myself, okay, I tell her, okay, armadillo, that's what I want. Send me an armadillo. I go to sit down like a week later to finish reading the book. And the next paragraph says, pick something like an aardvark, an armadillo, a hummingbird. And I was like, okay, that's weird. Then, like 2 days later, I'm on social media. Someone's armadillo tattoo shows up.
Wow, from
a tattoo artist in Texas. I have nothing to do with Texas. So I was like, what the heck? And then one of my listeners sent me on their Instagram, an armadillo rescue came across their stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, that's beautiful. Here's what I've learned, and you've probably learned the same thing. Animals leave their bodies, but they never leave us. They're always with us, and they're always sending signs. I had a client who was absolutely guilt-ridden over her dog. Did she euthanize him the right time? Did she wait too early? Was it too late? And one of her biggest complaints was, and he's not sending me any signs. I haven't heard
Yes.
from him. I keep asking him to come to me. I keep trying that he'll come to me in my dreams. I haven't heard from him. He hasn't visited me. Is he mad at me? Does he not love me anymore? I can't breathe. So I'm like, okay, yeah, I'll talk to him. And so I brought this up to the dog. I said, your mom's saying that you haven't visited her. What's going on? And he goes, yes, I have. And I said, well, can you give me an example? And he showed me a cat walking past their house. And I said, can you tell me more about that? And he goes, no, just tell them the cat. Tell them I sent the cat. I said, okay. So I called the people and I said, he said that he sent the cat, that there's a cat that walks by your house. And they could not believe it. They said, yes, a few weeks ago, this cat showed up. He doesn't stay long, but he goes to their house every single day, visits for about 5 minutes, and then leaves. And the dog was like, I sent him to say hello to you.
That's wild.
The other crazy story that I have is I was talking to this, I don't know, I think it was a cat. It was a long time ago. I can't really remember. I was talking to someone that passed away. And the animal kept showing, and this made no sense to me at the time. The animal kept showing me a pink jellyfish. I'm like, I don't get it. And he just kept showing it to me over and over and over, this pink, beautiful jellyfish. So, as an animal communicator, the law, like the rules are, you have to write down what you get and you have to say what you write down. So, did I want to tell this woman when I talked to her passed away cat about a pink jellyfish and sound insane? I did not. I did not want to tell her about a pink jellyfish. But I had to because the animal kept showing me the pink jellyfish. So I told her, he sent you a pink jellyfish. There was silence on the other end for the longest time. Then she couldn't stop crying and laughing simultaneously. And I said, what's going on? She goes, just yesterday, there was an unmarked box. I don't know who sent it, with a beautiful glass globe of a pink jellyfish. I'm like, well, it was from your dog or cat or what, whoever. I don't remember.
That's wild. Yeah, I always felt like, to me, that was like the main piece of like everything, is like, if I could get a sign. I always was the type of person, I didn't care about what the afterlife looked like. I didn't care, as long as there was one, first of all. That's was my main thing. And so to me, the sign was always a recognition that there is something else after this, and that I'll see her again. You know what I mean? Those were always my two things. I didn't care about the logistics. All I cared about was those two things. And that's what I like. The sign thing was such a big thing for me, because I just wanted so bad to be able to say, okay, without a doubt. And it's still, I still doubt, because that's how I am and I'm weird and I have to doubt it. But there was just that part of me that was like, if I could just get 100% sign without a doubt that it is her and that she's around and that I'm good to go, I could live the rest of my life and not be so stressed out. Because I'm stressed out all the time about it. You know, I'm always thinking, like, if death is just death, then like I'll never see her again. You know, so, and the reincarnation is very interesting. We had a guest that came on the show. She was our season opener, and she was talking about how canines can be spirit guides and guide you through life, and they can, you know, really show up when you need them and all this stuff. And I was telling her, I'm like, it's crazy, because you're 100% right. It's like they know. Animals know when you need them, because it's not just dogs. I feel like cats and I had a chinchilla, like they all just kind of show up when you need them, and they know that you need. Peach is upset with me. Peach, it's fine. Yoshi, leave her alone. Peach is very upset with me right now because she's in the kennel. But yeah, I just think that's the sign thing. I think is one of the biggest things that I wanted to like work on. Because then I can be a little bit more at peace.
Yeah, and she showed you two. She sent you not one, but two armadillos.
Yeah. Well, and of course, you always get the naysayers. You know, I was telling it at like a It was a support group, and I was telling them the story, and they were like, you know, someone in the support group, which is supposed to be for like loss, was like, oh, it's because you said it so many times your phone heard you.
Oh, that's
And I
that
was
would
like, please don't tell me that.
no.
Don't tell me that you're gonna make
No. Our animals are always sending us signs. They are always with us. And I don't know, after that whole phone thing that I told you about, I will never doubt again. When I see a sign and I think it's a sign, then it's a sign.
Yeah, 100%. I think you're right. I think as people, we just want that unequivocal, proof that it is what, that's what it is, because there's always that part of your brain that's telling you it isn't what it is. But I'm glad that you were able to talk about the signs. So do you agree with that? You'd be a little like be intentional with the sign, maybe say what you were are looking for, or I mean, what do you think on that? Do you think if somebody is listening that's like, my companion animal passed away 12 years ago and I've gotten zero signs, what would you tell them?
I would say that I would ask, could there be signs that you missed? Are there butterflies around you? Are there rainbows? Are there coins? Is there weird technology stuff that happens? Like, what could you have missed? Because our animals really do try to keep in touch. And if there have been signs that you might have missed, maybe asking for something specific is a way to get it. Just like you asked for an armadillo and you got it. Maybe if they ask for something really specific and they get it, maybe that would help them see it more clearly.
No, that's great.
I did a reading for this amazing Australian shepherd, and I had the very distinct pleasure of talking to him several times because I got to speak to him when he was alive and well. Then I got to speak to him when he was diagnosed with an illness, and kind of like carve out his bucket list. And then I had the pleasure of speaking to him once he was on the other side. And both times, once he was preparing to go and the next reading when he was on the other side, he kept telling his people, don't worry, there's going to be butterflies everywhere. And these people live somewhere very cold. I can't remember where they live, but they live somewhere that snows. And they'll text me and email me even now saying like, it is the dead of winter and there are butterflies. It makes no sense. Butterflies don't live in the winter. They're like, but they're everywhere.
That's amazing. That is so amazing. Do you think that it's like, I don't know, like, is it more that the people that are seeing these signs, and this is just a general question, the people that are seeing these signs are getting these big, ways of signs. Do you think it's they're more open to it and that's why they're getting it? Or do you think, like, what do you think is the maybe the reasoning why somebody may miss it? Maybe they're not getting like the in your face, sign. Like, what could be that they're missing it? Could it be they're just not open? Like, do you have to be open, or do you have to? Because I feel like grief kind of closes you off too, so it can be hard to like feel things.
No, that's really true. I mean, grief definitely closes us off. Absolutely. So, I mean, step one is getting through the grief, right? But step two is really choosing to believe. I mean, I think that people that see the signs and recognize the signs and own those signs are people that are not only open, but they're choosing to believe. They're choosing to go, if I see something beautiful today, it was from my animal. And so it's a beautiful thing because that animal can then much more easily communicate with their person and they're still continuing that beautiful relationship. When we're closed off and we don't choose to believe, our animal's working so hard to reach us and it's falling on deaf ears and it's painful, not just to us, but to the animal who's trying to reach out to us. So, there's a lot of reasons why we're closed off to signs. I mean, our religions don't support it, and our school system doesn't support it, and our family origins might not support it, and our culture in general is very far removed from who we were as, native and Aboriginal cultures. The veil between quote unquote real life and the spirit world was a very, very thin line when we were native, right? And when we were Aboriginals, we knew that there was a whole world just on the other side of the veil, and we could connect and we could talk and we could feel and we could visit. And now in this Western culture, it's, well, if you can't see it, taste it, and touch it, then it doesn't exist. And our animals, our departed animals, are here to say that is not true. There is so much that we can't see with the naked eye, but we can feel. And it's time that we start going with the feeling. It's time that we start acknowledging what we can't see. It's time that we erase those negative messages and we open our hearts and our souls so that our loved ones can come through to us because they want to. They want to come through to us. They want to be with us. They want to continue their love affair with us. We just need to say yes to it.
You just gave me chills. You literally just gave me chills. It's weird because, so you know how they always say children are like, for some reason, they are more open to things. And I mean, people can't really explain. I'm going to tell you, I want to say this and you're going to be like, this is kind of weird. But so we got Peach and all of our dogs, you know, I don't remember if they were like this as puppies like she is, but she's so observant about things that are the weirdest, like things that I'm like, is it because she's a puppy? And she's like in that time frame of like, she sees more and isn't like, you know what I mean? Because she looks at planes and geese like flying over, like our other dogs, things fly over and they're just like, yeah, okay, whatever. They never look up. They never observe it, nothing. A plane flies over and she was like watching it fly over, or like she'll watch TV, which is weird. They don't all watch TV, or I'll be FaceTiming somebody and she can see them like on the screen. If I do it to one of my other dogs, they're just like, you know, like what's, I don't see nothing, but she sees, it's wild how like more observant the younger people are. And I almost wonder if it's like you said, it's like they're, I don't know, they're not like jaded yet, I guess is maybe a word that I would use. Like they're not just, well, like you said, if I can't see it or hear it or touch it, that means it's not real type of thing. And they're not in that mode. So they're seeing things and feeling things that are different, which is comforting to me, to be honest with you. But that's, you are 100% right on that. Because I always look at that back at like cultures that you know, we're really into like dying was different for them. It was a transition more than like our culture feels like it's like the end, right? But like a lot of other cultures, it's like it's a transition. It's not the same. It's just another transition in life versus like, oh, well, you die, you're done. That's all there is, you know, type of thing. So no, that's awesome. And I think it's so cool that you're able to, you know, communicate with these animals that have been through these horrible situations and, you know, like talk things through with them and let them know that, you know, that it's going to be better from here on out. Because I, you know, it always bothered me when animals were scared because they didn't know if they were going to be hurt again, or they didn't know if somebody was going to treat them horribly. And so it's beautiful that you're able to communicate with the animals that you're around or you do sessions with to tell them like it's going to be okay.
Yeah, I'm very, very grateful for my gift. Isn't it funny how it was like a curse for so long and I was so teased and bullied for it, but now it's my superpower and it's my gift and I'm so grateful for it. And I think that that's the whole process of just kind of learning who we are, right? You brought up a number of times, like feeling quote unquote crazy because you love animals so much and you're so empathetic and you're so connected. But there's more and more and more of us. And it is your gift and it is your superpower and it is what makes you amazing. To feel so deeply, to be so raw, to be so open, to be so connected. We need more people like that in the world.
We do. It's hard. We always talk about it. I used to have a co-host and she actually had to stop doing the podcast because of hearing, well, she was like me. We'd both be bawling every single time we'd interview anybody or hear a horrible story or anything like that. And she's actually a director of a rescue, a dog rescue. So she, it was like double time for her, you know, she was having to see it and then hear it on here. So she had to step out, but it's beautiful and we need more people like us, but it's also so like draining, you know, like it's really hard to I feel like I need to get better about like controlling it a little bit more, where I'm not just taking everything in every time. We talk about it on the podcast before, but like I'll go to somewhere and someone will just trauma dump on me, and I'm like, okay, because I'm just so, anxious about it, or I feel what they feel and it bothers me, and then I'll cry in the middle of Walmart because someone's telling me about their grandma that passed away, and it's like, I can't do this. So I think I need to work on it better. But yeah, we do need more people like this in the world, especially people who are sympathetic and empathetic toward animals, because
Yeah, and
it's.
it is hard. It is hard to walk around open and bleeding all the time. It is. I mean, I've been that way since I was born, and it's just how I'm wired. And my family thinks I'm, ridiculous and crazy. And nobody, all my friends are like, "What's wrong with you?" But it is the way that we walk around. And I think that we're never going to change who we are, and we're never going to change our empathetic reaction to pain and trauma, because that's how we feel and that's how we react, and that's never going to change. What I have been working on changing is recharging my batteries and self-care, because
Okay, sorry about that. You guys probably heard all the craziness. My husband came home, and so, the typical where they just freak out, and then I didn't want to have you guys listen to it. So we're gonna continue what we were talking about. I wanted to talk about, we kind of got into the whole sign thing. Let's talk about the reincarnation. You had got into it that you were talking about how your the second cow in Nashville was a reincarnation of Buddha. I want Duncan, right? Was that right?
Dudley, Dudley, yeah.
Dudley. I'm sorry. I was trying
Dudley.
so hard to remember. But Dudley was, you feel like, a reincarnation of Buddha. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Sure. So I had Buddha for 13 and a half years, and then she passed away, and it almost killed me. I got through that. And once I learned to reconnect with Buddha and talk to her every day, she became my best advisor. I mean, giving me business advice, marriage advice, parenting advice. I mean, I went to her for everything, and I still to this day talk to her every single day. And she kept telling me that she wasn't coming back. So I was like, okay, no problem. One night I quote unquote dreamt, I was sleeping, sound asleep, and a woman sat on my bed and in a very, very loud voice said, "In 6 months, you're going to start your second gentle barn, and it's going to be the best 2 years of your life." And my eyes flew open, and there was no one there. And it was so vivid, and the instructions were so clear that I literally wrote it down with the date on my journal. Went back to sleep, didn't think anything more of it. Then all of a sudden, so this was in December. In January, my birthday was coming up. And my husband is very giving when it comes to my birthday. And I don't know where this came from. Somebody must have been whispering it in my ear. But all of a sudden, I told Jay, "The only thing I want for my birthday is to rescue a cow." And he was like, "Oh, okay." He's used to me saying things like that. A few days later, Jay got a call from a woman in Tennessee that knew of a cow that had lost his foot, was hobbling around on three legs, terrible. The rancher was going to send him to slaughter. She had called 200 rescue facilities and ranches trying to see if they could save him and take him. Everybody said no. So she finally called us and said, "Look, I know that you're really far away, but can you at least give me advice? I don't know what to do." So Jay found a bovine surgeon nearby, and he found a company that would make a prosthetic foot. And he came to me one day and said, "Happy birthday, we're going to Tennessee." And we went to Tennessee and rescued Dudley and brought him to the hospital for his amputations and his surgeries and his underwater treadmill therapy and acupuncture and the design of his prosthetic. Anyway, by the time he was to be discharged, we toyed with the idea of driving him to California, but that's a long and grueling drive. Plus, in California, we're in a desert, and those grains of sand going into the prosthetic, that didn't make any sense. And by the time he was discharged, Dudley was world famous, and we knew we would have the support. We went to the board and said, "Can we please open a second gentle barn in Tennessee for Dudley?" Our grand opening was literally 6 months to the day of that dream. So then I started fixating, okay, because remember, the woman said, 6 months from today, you will open your second gentle barn and you will have the two best years of your life. So then the 6 month part came true. So I'm thinking, why did they say 2 years?
Yeah.
Why did they just say you're going to have a great time? Why 2 years? Am I going to die in 2 years? Are me and Jay going to get divorced in 2 years? Is the gentle barn going to shut down in 2 years? I started like fearing the worst.
Mm-hmm.
Well, 2 years later, I found out why. Through a complication from a skin graft surgery, Dudley passed away 2 years later. But basically, she was saying, you're going to have the two best years of your life because I'm coming back. So I had two more years with my Buddha. And so when I met Dudley, I looked into his eyes. I couldn't breathe. I froze. And my first thought was, that's Buddha. But my brain said, no, she said she wasn't coming back. So I left it alone.
Mm-hmm.
Then there was a time in the hospital where I sat down and I was meditating. And unbeknownst to me, because my eyes were closed, Dudley laid down, closed his eyes, and we were meditating together. My husband took a picture of it. So when I was done with the meditation and Jay showed me the picture, he said, you know, that's Buddha, right? And I said, I know, but she said she wasn't coming back. And he goes, I'm just saying that is Buddha. So again, like I'm feeling like it's her, but my brain is saying it's not. And I write this, by the way, in my book coming out called Cowhog Therapy. I write this whole story. So on one of our trips from California to Tennessee, I had a conversation with Dudley. And I said, look, me and Jay think you're Buddha, but you know, you told me the first time around you weren't coming back. So I want proof. If you are Buddha, I want you to do the one and only thing that Buddha did for me every single day of her 13 and a half years that no other cow has ever, ever, ever done. I want you to wrap your neck around me and I want you to hold me. And then I'll know that you're Buddha. So we landed in the airport. We drove to the gentle barn, got out of the car, ran over to where Dudley was. He was standing up as if he was waiting for me. I got into the pasture. I put my arms around him and my face on his shoulder. And I closed my eyes. And he wrapped his neck around me and held me.
Wow.
And I was bawling my eyes out. And I was like, okay, you're Buddha. Yeah. End of discussion. And that was it. I got my Buddha back for two more years.
So my brain is like all these questions. Okay. So for the did she go into Dudley when she knew, like, was she always Dudley? Or was she, when she knew she could be with you and it was like set to go? Because we had another animal communicator on and she was explaining that I guess like they can come and go when they feel in the body of the companion animal. So I just like, I'm always like, so then if I can I just like, is it, if that dog is my dog or, you know, like I always want to make sure that I'm like, really in tune with what's happening so I don't miss it. Do you feel that he was Buddha the whole time? Or do you feel like it was, like, because how old was he? He was an older cow, right? When he was rescued?
He was a year old when we met him.
Oh, okay.
And Buddha had passed away years prior.
Okay. So you think Buddha was Dudley the entire time?
Yeah. I think that she, you know, she wanted me to go national. She kept urging, right, we have to do more for the planet, more for animals, more for people. Mm-hmm. We got to hurry up. We got to expand. We got to do this. We got to do that. And I'd go to the board of directors and say like, hey, you know, we want to expand. And they're, oh, we're not financially ready. We're not organized enough. You know, we're not ready. And I would go back to Buddha and I would say, I'm sorry, you know, we're not financially ready. And she was like, I don't care about your human logistics. Like that is boring to me. Figure it out. And I think that eventually it just wasn't happening. And she was like, oh, fine, I'll just do it myself. And she came to ask Dudley to help us go national and open the gentle barn. And by the way, when I asked Dudley, when it was obviously clear that he hugged me and he was Buddha,
mm-hmm.
I said, but you said you weren't coming back. And he goes, a girl can change your mind. I was like, okay, good point.
I love that. That is awesome. And that's reassuring, you know, that it was years later and, you know, they could always pop back up. And I always feel like you kind of know too, like your heart knows when there's just something weird about it. You know what I mean? There's just something off and different where you're like, okay, I feel like she is reincarnation of our other dog because she does the things that our other dog used to do that was like weird. And
There
I'm
you go.
like, are you? And so I tested out, because she's a puppy, I'd say my other dog's name to be like, are you gonna look at me? Are you gonna tell me that you're her or not? But I think she is, because it's wild how much she is like her. And it's not a breed thing. Yeah, they were the same breed, but it's just very different.
Well, they try to come back in a way that you'll recognize them. But I will say that if you're thinking that's somebody that you knew before, then it probably is, because why else would you have that thought? And I think that our angels and guides come around more often than we think. We don't talk about reincarnation in our culture and in our religions, but I think it's more prevalent than we realize. I think that there are some animals that kind of follow us throughout our entire lives. So Buddha came to me. She was my very first cow. She helped me open the gentle barn, run our programs, and learn how to heal people. So she came really as my teacher. Then she came back as Dudley, as my partner, to open the gentle barn, Tennessee, and go national. Then Dudley passed away after 2 years. And during the pandemic, we were getting a lot of cows from the slaughterhouse that were going there pregnant and giving birth on the kill floor. And
Oh, my.
the slaughterhouse owner allowed us to have the mom and the baby, and we'd bring them home to the gentle barn. We were getting a lot of calls during the pandemic. And one of the calls was, there's a calf that was born here. We're going to process the mom. You cannot have her, but you can come and get the calf if you want. And immediately when my husband Jay told me this story, immediately when he's telling me this phone call, a golden calf flashed in my mind and I could see him. And so Jay was going to go get him, and I was going to set up the nursery and the infirmary. And I said, Jay, when you get him, you got to let me know if he's golden, because I could see him in my mind. Sure enough, when he was in the trailer and Jay was driving home, he called me and he goes, yeah, he's gold. He came home, ended up too sick to heal in the infirmary, and we ended up moving him into our house and living with him in the house for 9 months. And I moved downstairs to become his mom. And I still, he's 3.5 years old, and I still go down and bring him a bottle every morning. And listen, over the course of almost 25-year history of the Gentle Barn, we have rescued, and three states, three locations, we have rescued hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of cows. Hundreds of cows. There's only been three out of all those hundreds that wrap their neck around me and hold me: Buddha, Dudley, and now John Lewis. And I'm convinced that John Lewis is Buddha. And I think he came as my mom, my teacher. Then he came back as my partner to help us go national. And now he came back as a baby, because I'm in this phase of my life where I'm learning how to be a matriarch and I'm learning how to be a leader. And so he came back as a baby to help people open their hearts to cows. And he did phenomenal work, and he helped launch during the when we reopened after the pandemic, he helped launch not only cow hug therapy for probation camps, domestic violence shelters, homeless shelters, foster agencies, but he helped launch cow hug therapy for individuals.
That's amazing. And hearing everything you've done, like you have done so much for animals, but you are like extending that. You're rescuing them, but you're like rescuing humanity at the same time and showing them what love is in situations that they don't get a lot of love, and that's amazing to do like twofold like that. To give them a place to be have comfort and love and affection that they've never had before, and then also offering education to people and healing to people so this cycle doesn't keep going and going and going and going.
Well, and there's three reasons for that. Number one, I was saved and healed by animals when I was a kid, so I know how therapeutic animals can be, so I wanted to pay it forward. Number two, I love people just as much as I love animals. And number three, if humanity doesn't change and all of us rescuers and animal lovers just keep saving them and saving them and saving them and saving them, it's kind of like it's like treading water. We're not going to get anywhere.
Yes.
We're not going to go anywhere. The abuse and the pain is still going to keep happening, and there's just not enough room to rescue as many animals as it needs rescuing. This travesty is going to stop and end when humanity changes. And so I want to bring people into the gentle barn to meet these cows and the pigs and the chickens and the turkeys and hear their stories of resilience and realize that they have language and they have feelings and they have love and that they're the same as us, even though they look different. And when their hearts open and they choose to be kinder to animals and stand up for them instead of enslave and eat them and wear them, then humanity will change and then animals will be safe. So I'm saving animals, but that's not where my mission ends. We're saving animals, sharing their stories, opening the hearts of humanity so that humanity can change, so that animals don't have to suffer these atrocities anymore.
Well, and it goes hand in hand with we're like the society is failing animals, but it's also failing itself. I mean, if you look at how society is now versus how it was 10, 20, 30 years ago, we're on a really crappy road and we're not even respectful or treat other human beings nicely. So we need to learn to treat animals better and treat each other better, because we're not going to get anywhere if we keep, we're not going to even have the planet. We're not going to have, we're not going to have existence if we don't get our shit together and start treating each other and treating animals and our planet kindlier. And this is no political dig, nothing. It has nothing to do with that. It's 100% as people, we need to be better people.
Amen. If we don't make a change, we are going to render ourselves extinct. Going vegan, protecting the environment, making our bodies healthier, saving animals, it's as much for the environment as animals as it is for ourselves.
Oh, 100%. 100%. I think it's a whole like lifestyle change and how we do things, how we communicate, how we it always like blows my mind. I'm a over communicator. That's what everybody around me always says. I'm an over communicator because I have learned that I would much rather over communicate something than under communicate it. And then it turns into a fight or a misunderstanding, or my anxieties at high levels because I'm thinking I hurt your feelings or I did something bad towards you or whatever. And I'm trying, like everybody around me, I keep like, they're probably so irritated with me, but I keep talking about like communication. Like, you have to tell people how you're feeling for them to understand where you're coming from, because everybody's so selfish and coming from, where they only think about themselves. And that goes for communication for to other people that you may not know, or even animals, like communicating to them or communicating, like put yourself in their position. Put yourself in, and would you like to be in a crate 24/7 and have no love and affection or be starved? No, you don't want that. So don't do that to them.
Agreed.
So that's awesome. I think you are amazing. This was a very pleasant surprise. I try to not research anybody when I interview them or when they are on the show, because I want to come into it like my listeners do, where I don't know anything and I'm just coming into it new. And this is like amazing. Like, I'm so proud of you. I am proud of everything that you've done, and you're making things happen.
Thank you. Oh my God. Thank you so much.
Yeah, of course. All right, so tell me where people can find you. Tell me where they can find your books, website, your gentle barn, like you said three states, correct?
Yeah. So people can find the Gentle Barn by going to gentlebarn.org. They can find out how to visit. They can look at all our beautiful animals. They can even sponsor one of their favorites. They can make a donation to help us say yes to the next animal that has nowhere else to go. You can get a signed copy of my book, My Gentle Barn, on the website, gentlebarn.org. It's also available anywhere books are sold. My new book coming out, Cow Hug Therapy, is available for pre-order on Amazon right now and will be published on May 21st. And people can find out more about animal communication and book a session by going to ellielax.com.
Awesome. I hope so many people reach out to you because I think it is a very healing experience when you're going through the grief to get some of those answer, those questions answered that, like you said, grief is already hard. And then you put into that guilt and it makes it like it feels impossible to like move through life. So I really hope people reach out to you and I think that you are amazing. And I hope more people listen to your story and do something awesome that changes the world.
Well, thank you, Kayla. And like you, I mean, this podcast is changing the world. It's giving people a place to find community and realize that they're going through something that other people are going through. And it's just wonderful. I have really enjoyed this discussion and all of your questions. Thank you so much for having me.
Of course. Thank you so much. Thanks for listening. And I'll post all of her links that she mentioned on the podcast site, as well as our social medias. And we'll talk to you later.